I'm not happy about how easy it was for them to approach Susan Mark. And I'm not happy we didn't know about her from the get-go. We never even heard of her before the morning after. This whole thing was like an ambush. We were always behind the curve. I was looking at the photographs on the wall behind him, looking at the tiny figures, their shapes, their postures, their silhouettes. I said, "Really? We should have been told. Have a word with the Pentagon and with those guys from the Watergate." Sansom said, "I will." Then he went quiet, as if he was rethinking and reassessing, more calmly and at a slower pace than his usual fast field officer style. The lid is back on. He seemed to examine that proposition for a spell, from all kinds of different angles. Then he shrugged and got a slightly sheepish look on his face, and he asked, "So, what do you think of me now? Is that important?" "I'm a politician. It's a reflex inquiry." "I think you should have shot them in the head." He paused and said, "We had no silenced weapons." "You did. You had just taken one from them." "Rules of engagement. You should have ignored them. The Red Army didn't travel with forensics labs. They would have had no idea who shot who." "So, what do you think of me?" "I think you shouldn't have handed them over. That was uncalled for. That was going to be the point of the story, as a matter of fact, on Ukrainian TV. The idea was to get the old woman next to you and let her ask you why." Sansom shrugged again. "I wish she could. Because the truth is, we didn't hand them over. We turned them loose instead. It was a calculated risk, a kind of double bluff. They had lost their rifle. Everyone would have assumed that the Mujahideen had taken it, which was a sorry outcome and a major disgrace. It was clear to me that they were very scared of their officers and their political commissars, so they would have been falling over themselves to tell the truth, that it was Americans, not Afghans. It would have been a kind of exculpation. But their officers and their commissars knew how scared they were of them, so the truth would have sounded like a bullshit story, like a pathetic excuse. It would have been discounted immediately as a fantasy. So I felt it was safe enough to let them go. The truth would have been out there in plain sight, but unrecognized." I said, "So what happened?" "I guess they were more scared than I thought. Too scared to go back at all. I guess they just wandered until the tribespeople found them. Grigory Hoff was married to a political commissar. He was scared of her. That's what happened, and that's what killed him." I said nothing. Not that I expect anyone to believe me. I didn't reply. "You're right about tension between Russia and the Ukraine. But there's tension between Russia and ourselves, too. Right now there's plenty of it. If the Korngal part of the story gets out, things could blow up big. It's like the Cold War all over again, except different. At least the Soviets were sane in their way. This bunch, not so much." After that, we sat in silence for what felt like a long time, and then Sansom's desk phone rang. It was his receptionist on the line. I could hear her voice through the earpiece and through the door. She rattled off a list of things that needed urgent attention. Sansom hung up and said, "I have to go. I'll call a page to see you out." He stood up and came around the desk and walked out of the room, just like an innocent man with nothing to hide. He left me all alone, sitting in my chair with the door open. Springfield had gone, too. I could see no one in the outer office except the woman at the desk. She smiled at me. I smiled at her. No page showed up. "We were always behind the curve," Sansom had said. I waited a long minute and then started squirming around like I was restless. Then, after a plausible interval, I got out of my chair. I stumped around with my hands clasped behind my back like an innocent man with nothing to hide, just waiting around on turf that was not his own. I headed over to the wall behind the desk, like it was a completely random destination. I studied the pictures. I counted faces I knew. My initial total came to 24. 4 presidents, 9 other politicians, 5 athletes, 2 actors, Donald Rumsfeld, Saddam Hussein, Elspeth, and Springfield. Plus someone else. I knew a 25th face. In all of the celebratory election night victory pictures, right next to Sansom himself, was a guy smiling just as widely, as if he was basking in the glow of a job well done, as if he was not very modestly claiming his full share of the credit. A strategist, a tactician, a Svengali, a behind-the-scenes political fixer. Sansom's chief of staff, presumably. He was about my age. In all of the pictures, he was dusted with confetti or tangled with streamers or knee-deep in balloons, and he was grinning like an idiot. But his eyes were cold. They had a canny, calculating shrewdness in them. They reminded me of a ballplayer's eyes. I knew why the cafeteria charade had been staged. I knew who had been sitting in Sansom's visitor chair before me. We were always behind the curve? Liar. I knew Sansom's chief of staff. I had seen him before. I had seen him wearing chinos and a golf shirt, riding the 6 train late at night in New York City. Chapter 40. I checked all the celebration pictures very carefully. The guy from the subway was in all of them. Different angles, different years, different victories, but it was definitely the same guy, literally at Sansom's right hand. Then a page bustled into the office, and 2 minutes later, I was back on the Independence Avenue sidewalk. 14 minutes after that, I was back inside the railroad station, waiting for the next train back to New York. 58 minutes after that, I was on it, sitting comfortably, leaving town, watching the dismal rail yards through the window. Far to my left, a gang of men wearing hard hats and orange high-visibility vests was working on a section of track. Their vests glowed through the smog. The fabric must have had tiny beads of reflective glass mixed into the plastic weave. Safety through chemistry. The vests were more than highly visible. They were attention-getting. They drew the eye. I watched the guys work until they were just tiny orange dots in the distance, and then until they were completely lost to sight, which was more than a mile later. And at that point, I had everything I was ever going to get. I knew everything I was ever going to know, but I didn't know that I knew.